It's also okay to cheer when a speaker gets up here. No harm in that. Well, good afternoon, everyone. And anyone that's listening in or that might hear this later via the internet. My message is not specifically about Passover, but I wanted to maybe give a little bit of advice. This week I had to go to a dental hygienist twice. And so if you're feeling ever too prideful or too high on life, let me give you Naomi's card. I think she's an ex-CIA interrogator. I didn't know you had to take bone marrow when you're doing a dental cleaning, but I feel much more humble today than usual. If you could live a life and learn the lessons from extreme wealth, extreme popularity, extreme pleasure, extreme power, extreme intelligence and wisdom, would you? Wouldn't it be nice? You know, the grass is always greener. If only I had this, if I was smarter, things would be different. If I was taller, things would be different. If I could jump higher, if I could run faster, if my family was wealthy, if I had political connections, if I was smarter or the smartest, there's always something else. If we had that, it would change our lives. If we could take an extreme view of all those and just consolidate all that a person like that could learn, would you want to learn that? Of course, we would. I think we would. It would save us a lot of the effort and trials that we go through if we could just learn the lessons that, of course, Solomon has recorded for us in the book of Ecclesiastes. What is the greatest fear of mankind? Is it death? No, I think you can find a lot of people that say, no, I don't fear death. I think the answer that most people, if after thought, they would give is meaninglessness. Nothingness. That's what most people would fear. Is the idea that life results or ends or concludes in nothing. The book of Ecclesiastes is the question to which the rest of the Bible answers. Let me say that again. The book of Ecclesiastes is the question to which the rest of the Bible is the answer. It undermines every prop, every excuse, everything that mankind, and even us think we could rely on for meaning apart from God. Solomon, of course, in the book of Ecclesiastes has moments of great wisdom and advice. There are, of course, those things in the book of Ecclesiastes, but it's really not the main key purpose of the book. And we'll see that as we go through this today. The title of my sermon is The Vanity Experiments. The Vanity Experiments. It's actually part one. This will ultimately be a two-part sermon. So this is part one of The Vanity Experiments. Epistemology, kind of a fancy word, according to Webster's, is the theory or science of the method or grounds of knowledge. Basically, how a person or an organization, a society, a culture, the theory or science of the method of gaining knowledge, you know, by experimentation, by reasoning, by, you know, a different variety of sources of ways to learn things. And today I want to first, in this part one, is to look at the book of Ecclesiastes, really more of an overview, because I really started in to this topic on my part two, which were the experiments that Solomon conducted. And what did Solomon, in all of his glory, so to speak, as a man, what did he propose? What did he try to do? And that was my focus on those experiments that he conducted. But in doing that, I realized that the greater message may be in the experiment itself. In the very thing that Solomon was trying to do, not necessarily what he did. So I'm going to break this down into kind of parts that make up this experiment, just like a scientist or a researcher might do, is you first start with who, or who are the parties, or who's the author. And of course, in the book of Ecclesiastes, it's Solomon. If you would turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, we'll spend the entire message today in the book of Ecclesiastes. Well, I'll reference a few of the verses. But of course, the author is Solomon. We know that verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. So again, author is Solomon, but what's the significance of that? Why is Solomon the perfect person, so to speak, to give, to write, to preach this message that he preached in the book of Ecclesiastes? Well, first, he was wise. You don't need to turn to all these verses, but 1 Kings 3, verse 12. 1 Kings 3, verse 12 says, "Behold, I have done according to your words." This is, of course, God speaking. "I've done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you." Solomon, because you've asked for this thing, I'm going to make you wiser and have more understanding than any person who's ever lived to this time, nor will ever live after you, Solomon. That's quite a thing. Look at the brightest minds of today. And there are bright minds out there, bright minds sitting in here. But God tells Solomon, I'm going to make you the wisest, and not just wisdom, you know, maybe clever savings or anecdotal type of a thing where he knows, but actually understanding. I have given you a wise and understanding heart or mind. 1 Kings 4, verse 29. "And God gave," which is also an important two words, "and God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding." Again, not just wisdom, but understanding. There is a difference. He could put things together. He could take this wisdom and with reason, with intellect, and put things together in his mind. He understood things. And largeness of heart or mind. That's an interesting phrase. Largeness of heart. He gave him wisdom, understanding, and the largeness of mind, the capacity to learn, to add to that wisdom, to gain understanding and knowledge. Like the sand on the seashore. Unlimited in that sense. So here's this author of the book of Ecclesiastes, who's the wisest man ever, of course, apart from Christ. The man who was able to gain the most understanding of any human that's ever walked the earth. And has a mind to retain, learn, and add to even through understanding, like the sand on the seashore. That's pretty impressive. He's smarter than me. I hate to admit it, but he was smarter than me. That doesn't take much to believe that, I know. 1 Kings 10, verse 24. 1 Kings 10, verse 24. "Now all the earth," that's a pretty big audience, "all the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart." It's not just that he was smart and he's sitting in a cave drawing inventions on the wall. All of the earth sought Solomon. They could recognize that wisdom. They could recognize the understanding. They could recognize that largeness of heart, that capacity that Solomon had. Obviously, it would be unique. It would stand out. And it did. And it says, all the world, all the earth sought Solomon's presence. He's the perfect author for this book. And unfortunate for Solomon in some ways. He should have wrote that message to himself a little sooner, but we'll see that. So again, it's Solomon. He was wise, so that helps him, of course. He's the perfect person to write the book of Ecclesiastes. And then another point is that he had the resources to explore. It'd be one thing to have wisdom and understanding beyond measure, but have no resources. That'd be torture, wouldn't it? If you were the wisest and smartest, most intelligent person that's ever walked the earth, and they put you in a cage, that'd be tough. It would be tough. Well, Solomon had resources. 1 Kings 11, verse 3. Don't need to turn to all these verses. 1 Kings 11, verse 3. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. Well, you say, well, you know, he had lots of people around him. 1 Kings 4, verse 22. 1 Kings 4, verse 22. Now Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour, 60 cores of meal, 10 fatted oxen, 20 oxen from the pastures, and 100 sheep, besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fatted fowl. The commentary said that was enough to feed at least 10,000 people a day. And all this wealth and blessings, resources coming in into his kingdom, into his rulership, for him. That's just what it was for him and his servants and his household. 1 Kings 10, verse 14, regarding Solomon's wealth. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly, this is his annual income. His W-2 or maybe 1099 if you're an independent contractor would look pretty good if you were Solomon. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666. An interesting study and reason why that number is there. Talents of gold. Besides that, from the traveling merchants, from the income of traders, from all the kings of Arabia, and from the governors of the country. Again, that 666 talents of gold came in addition to, besides the other stuff that was coming into his wealth, into his coffers. Based on today's numbers, again, there are different talents, different weights, versions of a talent, so to speak. But just using a commonly accepted unit, that's the equivalent of between $900 and $1 billion a year in today's numbers. It's cash income. That's his cash. That's his gold. Besides the other wealth. Again, so he's got an annual income, let's keep it simple, of about $1 billion a year. Besides everything else that's coming to him. That's a pretty good gig he's got going there as the wisest, most understanding man on earth. That qualifies him to write this book of Ecclesiastes. Would we not want to know what he says? Why he says what he says? What is he trying to set forth? You know, what is God allowing to be communicated in the book of Ecclesiastes? Again, I was short-sighted in only wanting to look at the experiments that he conducted, but I think the bigger message is the process itself. So again, my part A in my notes is who. That's important when we're trying to break down the experiment that was conducted that we see in the book of Ecclesiastes. Who is important? If it were some other pauper, so to speak, that wrote the book, well, it would have been different for him if he had money. You know, if it was some guy who was, you know, not socially connected, well, yeah, but he's not qualified for that. We wouldn't listen to him. You know, if Bill Gates walks in, everybody wants to hear what he says. If some poor person comes in, not so much. They, you know, they're not successful. You know, you look at politicians today, they go on a speaking gig, you know, $200,000 an hour. You know, for what? Nothing as far as I can tell. You know, but there, it's that popularity, it's that notoriety. And Solomon had every bit of that to unimaginable lengths and degrees. But the second part of understanding the process that was carried out, that's illustrated in the book of Ecclesiastes, is the goal of this experiment that we're going to call Solomon's life, what he concludes, where he gets to. The goal of that experiment is common, not just to Solomon, but to every man who's ever lived. Every person who's ever walked the earth, lived, breathed a single breath of air, shares that a same and common goal that Solomon did. That goal, of course, is to work or you know, do something, work for happiness or meaning or permanence. There's that process. You can look at all cultures, people that do achieve many things. You know, there's man has an innate program in him that he wants to, you know, accumulate to be better, to learn, to grow. Mankind's journey generally is one of unhappiness. Of course, no one likes to be unhappy, uncomfortable, lack meaning, don't have love, don't fit in, social awkwardness, whatever it might be. People look for happiness. Well, they're unhappy, they look for happiness. beyond short, happiness could be for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, a day, a month. Once they achieve happiness on occasion, they want lasting happiness. Who wouldn't? Pretty obvious. And then beyond that, it's meaning. You look at the wealthiest people on earth, what do they progress to? Grants, politics, foundations. You know, they set up, they want to do things. They're looking for that, you know, they've achieved. They want to get to a higher level of meaning, of purpose. And there are passages, of course, that tell us that God said, yeah, that's good. You know, he put Adam and Eve in the garden and said, dress it, keep it. You know, you're going to work. 6 days a week you shall work. Work for what? Again, there's a process there that we're programmed into. But that, you know, all of mankind has gone through in some form or fashion what Solomon did. God, though, in his wisdom, said, I need to have a single man who nobody could ever say, yes, but if I only had this. Sorry, it's already been done. His name is Solomon. If I was only successful, then I would learn this lesson, or I would be happy, or, sorry, Solomon, he was successful. If I was only politically connected, if I was powerful, if I only had one wife, two wives, 10 wives, 500 wives, 700 wives, whatever you can think of, Solomon's been there, done that. And God in his wisdom said, if I don't have that in the Bible, mankind will say, yes, but in my pursuit of happiness, if I only had all wisdom and understanding, and if I was only the smartest man on earth, then I could be happy. God can look at that person and say, sorry, that's already happened. His name is Solomon. So again, the book of Ecclesiastes is important, not just to us, but as I've mentioned, it's the question that the rest of the Bible answers. How do you find meaning? What's important? What do we value? What is character? What is lasting? What's temporary? What's eternal? All of that, you know, Ecclesiastes is a book in that sense that the world hates. You know, it's what the world thinks they have. Wealth, power, popularity, notoriety, fame, fortune, athletes, whatever. Sorry, read the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon had all that. He had all that. But comes to a conclusion, of course, that we know, which we'll cover. So again, Solomon had the resources in pursuit of a goal of happiness, then lasting happiness, then meaning. That's what he had. That's what he wanted. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3. What profit, this is the question. This is the million, billion, trillion, infinite dollar question. What profit, what advantage, or what remainder has a man from all his labor in which he toils? Again, toils is another word for works or labors hard, under the sun. Again, that's the age-old question. What advantage? The International Standard Version says, what does a man gain from all the work that he undertakes on earth? So what? So you're a billionaire, so you're a millionaire, so you have an income of $1 billion a year, besides all the other wealth and political favors and connections that you've got. So what? What profit? What advantage? He's not asking, is there any advantage? He'd be a fool, right? There is an advantage, I can assure you, of $1 billion a year income. That's not the question being asked. The question is, what lasting benefit, what lasting advantage, what lasting gain is there? Why? Because all that Solomon had was not lasting. In fact, he may not have had anything that was lasting. We're uncertain about that. It's hard to tell. But he's certainly not talking about all that he had, because that'd be foolish. You know, if used properly. So again, what advantage does a man have from all his labor that he works in trying to have happiness, not just short-term happiness, long-term happiness, and then ultimately meaning? What advantage, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? That's the question. You look at the word, these words in the book of Ecclesiastes. Work, works, labor, labors, toil, toiled, and hand. Those all indicate, you know, all have that picture of what you do, the time that you spend, the effort that you put into things. Those words appear 43 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. What we do, what mankind does, you know, everything you can think of, anything under the sun, wrap that all up in those words, the work, the hand, you know, 43 times. That's quite a bit, quite a bit. Summarily, these words, profit, share, heritage, reward, and portion appear 14 times. So again, man puts his efforts, his hands, his labor, his toils into things, and he's doing it because he's wanting meaning. He's wanting a profit, an advantage, a gain from those things. He's wanting a share from those things. He's wanting a heritage, something that lasts. He's wanting a reward for those things. It's not just the billion-dollar income. At some point, he's like, well, $1 billion, so what? I mean, what's next? I'm going to die in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So what? Where's the meaning? Where's the real lasting benefit, reward, profit, portion? Again, that's what Solomon is addressing. And he's the perfect, as we've already covered, author to do that, because there's never been another person like him. As wealthy as we may think, you know, Bill Gates or these other people are around the world that are just billionaires, Solomon had much more wealth. So again, when you look at those words, you can see that Solomon is searching for that meaning, just like mankind is. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Verse 21. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Those are good things. Yet, even despite that, he must leave his heritage. He has to leave all that he's worked for, all the hours and time and intelligence and wisdom and understanding and effort and wives and family and billion-dollar income, and besides all the things that else are rolling into the kingdom. All of that, he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. Not really, Solomon. To Solomon it was, because he missed the point. Who cares about that stuff, Solomon? It's on loan. Because Solomon wasn't focused. He's just like mankind in that search, but unfortunately for Solomon, he didn't get to the start. He didn't get to the answer to the end of his life. We've got to get to the same conclusion today. That's how we learn from his lessons. Verse 22, for what has a man for all his labor? Again, you see these words over and over. And for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun. We're searching. Mankind is searching. We are searching as individuals, as a family. You know, everybody works and sets their hands to something. Ultimately, they want that something to have happiness, lasting happiness, and meaning. But at the end of all that, they realize it's still just stuff. It may be achievements. It might be a plaque. It might be a pat on the back. It might make you feel good for the moment. It may even be service to others. But will it be lasting? I don't mean lasting for a minute or 10 minutes or an hour or a year, but eternally. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 22. So I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? That's all he's got. Enjoy whatever it is you can produce and enjoy, because that's all you got. That's what Solomon's saying. Sounds like he didn't have a big picture. I can't completely make it that statement emphatically, but sure it seemed like Solomon was missing the boat on this. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 15. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came. And he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. Verse 16, and this also is a severe evil Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind, for vanity? Verse 18, skipping to verse 18. Here's what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor, which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him. For it is his heritage. That is his reward. Yeah. Enjoy what you can, because that's all you're going to get. That's all there is. That's the meaning that you'll have. Verse 19, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. That sounds good when you first read it, but he's really missing the point. Because the other verse says that God gives wealth and power, but doesn't give the power to eat of it. So, you know, again, why? Because sometimes people have wealth, but they're miserable. They're miserable. They wish they can get rid of it. 9 verse 4. Again, when we look at the idea of the goal of working for happiness, lasting happiness and meaning, these verses tell us what Solomon had learned, or at least was attempting to learn, the process that he was engaged in. 9 verse 4, but for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope. While you're still alive, you got hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Verse 6, also their love, their hatred, and their envy have now perished, and nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. Well, Solomon, that's pretty miserable. That's miserable. They have no more reward. At death, that's it. If so, it is vanity. Because, you know, his thesis, all is vanity, is not true. You know, raising a child, is that vanity? Serving others, is that vanity? Reading the Bible, is that vanity? Going to church, is that vanity? I mean, Solomon's looking at it, all is vanity, but he's looking at all that man does. But he's so wrapped up in all that man does that he misses the point. Nine verse nine. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life. He has given you under the sun all your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life. Love your wife because, you know, at the end of the day, that's all you got. That sounds kind of, you know, it's negative no matter how you look at it. It sounds good. The wives are like, yeah, that a boy, that's good. You know, but Solomon's not really saying it that way. He's saying, you know, that's basically all you got is find a good woman and that's your reward. That's as good as it's going to get for you. For that is your portion in life and in the labor with which you perform under the sun. Verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there's no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. We quote that often, but he's actually saying that in the sense that once you die, it's over. So enjoy, live, eat what you can. In this passage, you know, really all you've got is your wife. You know, enjoy that. So again, Solomon, obviously, in his search for meaning, search for happiness, again, that's the same process, the same experiment that we, and certainly as mankind, participates in, looking for that meaning, that permanence. Solomon, obviously, didn't do well at it, even with all those resources. Another component of this experiment, my part C, if you're taking notes, is where. So again, we have who, we have the goal, we have, you know, who is, of course, Solomon, with resources and wisdom and knowledge, unlimited understanding. The goal of happiness, lasting happiness and meaning. Solomon's on that route. He's trying to find it. Where? I mean, what do you do? Where does this experiment being conducted? It's important. It's very critical to the understanding of the book of Ecclesiastes. Of course, the where is, quote, under the sun. Under the sun is where Solomon's looking. That's his problem. under the sun on earth. That's where he's looking. Under the sun, if apart from God. He never says that in the book of Ecclesiastes. Everything under the sun can be good and not vain if purpose and understanding of God, God's plan, purpose. But without that, nothing under the sun has any meaning. And Solomon proved that with an unlimited everything. So again, the phrase under the sun appears 29 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, and it only appears in Ecclesiastes. Well, why is that? Because it's not revealed knowledge. Solomon wasn't saying, here's what God, the creator, of whom I've got a wonderful working and intimate relationship, has taught me, is through me, spoken to me, what I've experienced. No, he's saying, here's what I have learned in my pursuit of happiness and long-term meaning here on earth under the sun. That's unfortunate. Solomon didn't get off the earth, so to speak. He was under the sun and appears 29 times. Under heaven appears an additional 3 times just in these 12 chapters. That's a lot. So again, Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes doesn't rely on divine revelation. You look at David or you look at all the other authors of books in the Bible, and they're expressing the mind, the character of God. Solomon's not doing that. He's expressing the wisdom that he has gained on earth as a human. Now, is that revealed by God? Yes, the book of Ecclesiastes is still inspired by God for the purposes that we can see. Apart from God, there isn't meaning. Apart from God's plan, apart from developing character, apart from the Holy Spirit and the power that it can have in us and with us, there isn't meaning. And nobody on earth who's ever been or will be can say, only if I had something else, I could have found that lasting meaning. I could have found true happiness if only I fill in the blanks. Sorry, Solomon's been there, done that. So Solomon, of course, uses human reason and observation. This is the experiment that he conducted. So it's experience. The book of Ecclesiastes is revelation or experience by darkness and not by light. You won't hear Solomon in here quoting God or saying God taught me this or through prayer. The word prayer doesn't appear in the book of Ecclesiastes. I mean, so Solomon is, again, he's expressing this experiment. Here are the results of this earthly under the sun experiment so that no one in mankind could ever say, God, I could have done it, but you just didn't give me the resources or the wisdom or the understanding or the power or the wives or the political connections or the whatever. Solomon had it all. Again, Ecclesiastes 1 verse 3, what profit has a man? That was the key question. What profit has a man from all his labor which he toils under the sun? Because if the question said above the sun, or what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils in work in unison with God, or in observance of God's way, or in striving to build godly spiritual character. Solomon's not asking that question. He's asking the wrong question. Of course, the experiment gives the answer. He's asking, what can man gain here under the sun? Apart from God. What can he gain under the sun apart from God? That's what the book is about. 1 verse 13, Ecclesiastes 1 verse 13, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. You can feel the cynicism. It's not an intimate relationship with the God, the Creator, who gave him wisdom and understanding. And we'll see that in part 2. It's an interesting study, the word I in the book of Ecclesiastes. Again, he set his heart to learn everything under the sun. So what's the result? Again, this is a common result for all of us. This experiment for all mankind is similar. We all share this. Again, we don't have the qualifications that Solomon did, but we have the same goal. We're still conducting the same experiment in the same place under the sun here on earth. And what's the result? What's the conclusion of the matter? That's my part D. Of course, the conclusion is always vanity. Vanity appears 37 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. Of course, it means breath or vapor or light wind, something that passes away quickly and completely, leaves no result or no adequate result behind. Solomon's saying, I don't care what you do, what you think you can do, what you might have, what you don't have. It's all not going to leave a result. It's not going to have that meaning that you want it to have. Again, his thesis, really, Ecclesiastes 1 verse 2, vanity of vanities. He's saying it's vanity, but the vanity of the vanities is what? Is that they're not what they seem to be. So you can have something that's vain, but the vanity of that vain thing is that it doesn't do what you thought it would do. Does that make sense? Vanity of vanities. Wow. Not only vain, but the thing that's vain did not fulfill, did not give, did not do what you thought it would do. It didn't lead to the happiness that you expected to find in it. That's the vanity of that vanity. Wordplay, but it's meaningful. That's what Solomon, that's the conclusion. That's the result that he came to. 1 verse 14. I have seen all the works. Again, we're all working. Every person on earth is working. They're getting up, they're doing something. If it's trying to find the next meal, then that's what they're working towards. We're all working, doing something. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Everything. Well, that's not true, Solomon. If you get up today, you read the Bible, you prayed, you called, you wrote a card, sent it to a shut-in, made breakfast for your family. I mean, those are all good things. Those aren't vain things. It's all vain apart from the God's truth. All is vanity and grasping for the wind. Solomon, sorry, you're wrong. He was wrong. It's all vanity without God, without purpose. Of course, that's the purpose that he was looking for. But unfortunately for him, he didn't get there till much, much later in life, if at all. 2 verse 17. Therefore, I hated life. Hated life. Solomon, you had everything, dude. How could you hate having a $1 billion income? There's a new motorcycle I saw on the webpage browser, 300 horsepower motorcycle. Man, wouldn't that be nice? How about charity, giving things? Wouldn't that be fun? Would you hate life if you walked around helping people? Solomon had those resources, and I'm sure he did that. Why? Because he said he tried everything under the sun. Altruism or gifting or sharing, helping, sure he did that. But to what end? But to what end? What was lasting from that? Again, 2 verse 17. Therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. He repeats it over and over, kind of dispersed throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. He's making sure that we get that point. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 8, towards the end of the book. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. Well, no, it's not. All is vanity apart from God. That's really what the truth is. Again, he's missing that. The experiment that he has conducted through the book of Ecclesiastes, again, God revealed that to us through the book of Ecclesiastes. Again, all that's written in the Bible is written for what? For our admonition, for our learning. I feel sorry for Solomon in one sense. Don't you hate that? Solomon, I hate that you had to be a billionaire. I hate that you had to be the most powerful man on earth. I hate that you had to have all that notoriety and popularity and power and control and political, all those wives and everything else, whatever. All those motorcycles and chariots. You know, I hate that you had to have all of that. But that God lets you do that for our learning. Again, the key, of course, is vanity. Nothing is vain of itself. If you think about it, I say nothing. I'm sure there's something we could say is. But again, it's the expectations that we, or mankind, expect that that thing, object, success, condition will bring us. That's the vanity. Say, money. What's vain about money? It's a piece of paper or cloth or whatever it is. What's vain about a car? It's a bunch of metal and plastic and rubber put together. It's what we want it to become for us, what we think it will bring to us. You know, healthy children can be your vanity. Success, service can be your vanity. Well, I serve all the time. I serve, do that. I mean, there's nothing that can't be vain because of how we use it. You know, so the book of Ecclesiastes is important that we see that it's not all is vanity. It's really not true. It's all is vanity apart from God and what we want that item or object or condition to bring us. Because it's not going to bring the age-old question, happiness. It's not going to be the answer to that question for us. Next part of my experiment is why. Why vanity? All is vanity, but why? Why would everything be vanity? We haven't answered that yet. In breaking down the book of Ecclesiastes, which took a little time, I came up with four main reasons. I'll go through these very quickly because this is important. Is why vanity, or what are the sources of these vanity? You say all is vanity, but why? My first one is the sameness and indifference of evil in all things. Solomon recognized that there's this sameness or indifference of evil, and for that matter, for all things. Let me just read these verses pretty quickly. 2 verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? I said in my heart, this also is vanity, for there is no more remembrance of the wise man than of the fool forever. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. Not true. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. It's indifferent. You could work your tail off, do everything right, be a goody-goody, go to church, do all these things, and the guy over here is evil. He's, beating small children and dogs. Yeah, same thing happens to them both. He gets cancer, you get sick, he gets wealth, you don't, whatever. Someone thinks that, hey, there's just this system of just indifference. Well, does God say that? Of course not. God doesn't say, you can't find that verse that would support that anywhere in the Bible. That God says, I'm indifferent. He says, I know the hairs on your head. A sparrow falls to the ground, I know about it. Solomon didn't feel that. He didn't see that here on earth under the sun. He missed it. 8 verse 14. There's a vanity which occurs on earth. Again, an emptiness, a vapor, something that passes away quickly and completely. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said, this is also vanity. Again, the same thing. Good, bad, God is indifferent. The world is indifferent. The system is indifferent. 7 verse 15. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. You've seen it all. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. What's fair about that? What's godly about that? What's righteous about that? Solomon's, again, the source of vanity, wouldn't that be meaningless? That's what he's feeling. He's seeing that, look, no matter what you try to gain happiness, lasting happiness, and permanence, the whole thing's rigged against you because the good will suffer, the bad will benefit, vice versa. It's just, there's nothing that the man can anchor down to, so to speak. 9 verse 2. All things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath as he who fears an oath. Verse 3, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. Yeah, nothing happens after death. And everyone's basically good, bad, indifferent, because there is a sameness and indifference in the universe that it doesn't matter what you do. That's not true. It's not true. A second thing, or source, or reason why all is vanity to Solomon, is time is an endless cycle of repetition. Time is this endless cycle of repetition. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 4. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. Verse 9. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Verse 10. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new. It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things. That's not true. Nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Those things really aren't true. He's saying no matter what you do, it's a cycle. No matter what's come, it's been done. It's all been done. What you do in the future won't matter. It's just this big cycle set in motion by God who's distant. And that's a reason. That's what helps generate these feelings of vanity apart from God. Even Ecclesiastes 3, which is it's quoted a lot. It's actually quoted a lot by atheists, to be honest. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Time appears 29 times in that passage. It's really not the pleasant passage that we give Solomon credit for. He's basically saying there's a time for this, time for that, time for this, time for this. This cycle, this thing is set in motion. When you put all his comments in context, he's not whining necessarily, but he's basically saying there's this cycle of time that's set in motion of indifference. And things just, nothing's new, nothing's different, nothing's going to change. It just keeps rolling. And if that were true, it would be vanity. If we're all caught in this vortex of time that just keeps on doing this in a circle, regardless of what we do, good happens to evil, evil happens to good, nothing you did is new, everything is old, nothing's done that will ever be, so on and so forth. That is vain. There's no purpose in that. Chase your tail for the next 78 years and then it's over with. There's no purpose in that. A third source or reason for vanity is death. Death as the certain and final end of life to Solomon. 3 verse 18. I said in my heart concerning the condition of the sons of men, concerning mankind, God tests them that they may see that they themselves are like animals. Really? He sent his only begotten son to die for us like an animal. We're just animals. Verse 19. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. Ouch, Solomon. No purpose, no plan, no created in the image of God. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. That would surely contribute to your feeling that everything under the sun, apart from God, is vain. But there again, he's off base. He's completely off base. Animals, Adam and Eve, subject them, subdue them. There is no comparison between animals and mankind in the purpose and plan of God. No comparison. Solomon says, at the end of it all, we're going to die just like they are. A fourth source of this vanity that Solomon felt, that all mankind feels. Again, think of all these things in relation to mankind, death. Well, if you expect nothing after death, no judgment, no possibility for resurrection, eternal life, no plan, well then, you'd fit right in with Solomon. Mankind would fit right in. The fourth contributing factor to this vanity is the view of God as an unknowable mystery. Again, we've already seen that through virtually everything I've read, that Solomon did not have a day-to-day, hour-by-hour walk with God, footprints in the sand moment with God or with Christ. In the book, which we won't cover today, but part two, I have wisdom. I did this. He doesn't give credit to God. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 9. Again, this view of God as an unknowable mystery. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 9. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? Again, the word labor again. Verse 10. I have seen the God-given task with which the Son of Man are to be occupied. Even that's kind of a cynical, this God-given task that men are to be occupied. Just kind of do this. Verse 11, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. I referenced that or alluded to that earlier. God has put in us this innate programming that we want things that are permanent. We want a house because it's more permanent than a cardboard box. We want, you know, family. We want community because these things are enduring. He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Now, again, that's true. We can't understand everything that God does. But again, from Solomon's perspective, we'll see in context, no one can find out the work that God does. Well, that's really not true. God has revealed to us everything, 100% of everything we need to know. How much more do we need to know about God's plan, about building character, about the indwelling of the Holy Spirit? God has given us what we need. No one can find out the work that God does. That's to me a painful phrase from Solomon. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 18. I said in my heart concerning the condition of the sons of men. Again, that's kind of a negative phrase. This condition of the sons of men. God tests them that they may see that they themselves are like animals, which we've read the passage, the complete passage. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 2. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God, for God is in heaven and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. Does that sound like somebody that has an intimate relationship with God? God's up there and you're down here. Really? Well, I mean, do you walk and talk? Is God with you? Is the Spirit with you, Solomon? He didn't feel that. He didn't live that. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 13. Consider the work, again, the word work, of God. For who can make straight what he has made crooked? Wait a minute, Solomon. I can see where you can make that applicable. The stream is crooked. How do you make it straight? But again, in context here, it doesn't sound right. It's not something that you want to, hey, God, how can I make straight what you made crooked? That doesn't sound too good. And continuing in verse 14. In a day of prosperity, be joyful, but in a day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Really? God's trying to keep you in the dark. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 16. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth. Solomon, you were looking in the wrong place. Even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Solomon's saying, I'm the smartest man on earth. I have more wisdom and understanding. But God will not let me understand. What? Solomon missed the point. Though a man labors to discover it, I'm working, I'm reading, I'm praying, I'm studying, I'm drinking in the Spirit, I'm practicing the fruits of the Spirit, I'm doing all these things. But yet, though a wise man attempts to know it, he won't be able to find it. No, Solomon, sorry. You were looking under the sun. You're conducting this experiment, Solomon, of everything that mankind can think of apart from God. It's the wrong experiment, Solomon. But again, it's recorded by God for us, for mankind. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 5. 11, verse 5. As you do not know what is the way of the wind or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. You don't know what he's up to. You don't know what God's working on. You don't know what his plan is. There's no hope after death. Live, eat, because you're going to die just like an animal. That's surely going to contribute to vanity, vanity, always vanity. Solomon's heritage, unfortunately, is discovered or learned at the end rather than early in life. It would be nice if Solomon had learned all of this at age 7 or 8 or 20 or 21. Unfortunately, he comes to this conclusion at the end of his life. He never actually, he gets to the starting line, maybe. That's the advantage we have. Solomon, by the grace of God, was put through this experiment in that sense, that we can have this recorded lesson. We need to learn it now, not, you know, well, I got to first try success. I knew if I was making more money, I'd be happy. I'd find true and lasting meaning. You know, if I could just, you know, have plastic surgery and look more beautiful, I would be, my life would be different. Whatever it is. Here's Solomon's conclusion. 12 verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. And he goes on really what's kind of harsh. We hear this read fairly often, but it's kind of harsh. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Is that a heartfelt type of a thing? Again, it's true. It's a true statement. It is a true, simple, straightforward statement. Verse 14, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Again, it's a good conclusion. You know, I'm glad you got there, Solomon, but it doesn't feel the same as, you know, well done, good and faithful servant, or, you know, anything else that, you know, love God, love man. He doesn't use love. You fear God and keep his commandments because you're going to be brought into judgment. Again, it's true. It's good advice. But it's not the conclusion that we'd probably prefer to see Solomon come to. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 12. I'll read just a few verses here. Don't need to turn here. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 12. Now, if any man builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become evident, for the day will show it because it is to be revealed with fire. And the fire itself will test the quality of every man's work. If any man's work which he has built on remains, if it's not vain, if it's not temporary, fleeting, passes away completely like wind, like a vapor, well, what would last? Character. That's it. Spiritual development of godly character. That's really all that's going to last. He will receive a reward. That reward of looking, every man on earth who's ever lived is looking for that permanence, that reward, something greater than the next meal, for fitting in, for love, for security, for all those things, for permanence. Of course, we know that God's plan addresses that. The whole plan is about getting there. Job, a man very qualified to chime in here. Job 15, verse 31 says, let him not trust in emptiness, deceiving himself, for emptiness will be his reward. Solomon came to that understanding through a human experiment conducted under the sun apart from God. What do you feel you must work at, try, under the sun to find lasting meaning? In part two, I'll cover, you know, what were Solomon's vanity experiments. But until then, and certainly before Passover, discover your vanity experiments.